Coming up on Tech News Weekly, how the crowd can invest in entrepreneurs. Also, what Facebook's privacy post means for business. One of Waymo's LiDAR sensors is now on the market. And we say goodbye to a robot friend. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Tech News Weekly, episode 73, recorded Thursday, March 7th, 2019.
This episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by Gazelle, the trusted online marketplace for buying and selling used devices. Visit gazelle.com/twit to buy a certified pre-owned device and get 10% off your purchase.
And by Envoy. Envoy builds beautiful, modern software to help businesses elevate the physical workspace experience. With Envoy, visitors, you can greet guests with a welcoming, sleek iPad sign-in app while still protecting your people, property, and ideas. Start your free trial today at envoy.com/twit.
And by Hover. Register a domain name and build your online brand with Hover. Visit hover.com/twit. to get 10% off your first purchase of any domain extension for the entire first year. Welcome to Tech News Weekly. This is a show where every week we talk to people making and breaking the tech news. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. Sometimes making and breaking the tech news, other times making and not breaking, like, companies.
Yeah.
Making companies.
Making companies.
We'll just leave breaking out of it.
Exactly. Apple, Google, Twitter, Uber, we all wish we were there investing from the very beginning. But how do you know what's going to succeed? Our next guest has helped build an app that hopes to connect budding entrepreneurs with investors who might help them on their way to becoming the next big thing. Welcome COO of The Crowd, Chase Johnson.
Hi, how you doing? Thank you for having me.
Of course. So first, tell us about The Crowd. What is The Crowd?
Sure. Yeah. So The Crowd is where ideas meet opportunity. The Crowd is the world's first mobile app that allows any entrepreneur with a good idea to find a network of potential investors anywhere in the world.
And so one thing that I find really great about this app is you can set filters. Like if you just want to find, if you're an investor and you just want to find female entrepreneurs or, there's different filters. Tell us a little bit about how those filters work.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's essentially how you start the app is you have a filter system where you can look at any industry, geography, revenue, seed stage, and then you can hone in on, 3D printing or clean tech or esports, and then you get a stack of pitching entrepreneurs in 60 seconds or less right to your phone. And from there, you can swipe left or right with your hand, essentially right on the ones that you want to see more about and left on the ones that you'd like to pass on. And then you get an aggregate, essentially in a portfolio of companies that you're interested in looking further at.
So as a user, you've now collected a list of companies that you're interested in. Like, what is the next step for the user? Is this something where the user then decides themselves that they want to invest in it? Or is this like a selection process for a group of venture capitalists who want to know how the crowd feels about a particular concept or idea?
Yeah. So, we have basically what we're trying to do is build a relationship. We're a relationship building platform. And if investor wants to look further at the business, they can then see the description. They can see their company profile, their team. They can see any documents that they've uploaded, any NDA forms or anything that would be important for the investor to know. And then essentially we have a internal chat system where they can basically message the entrepreneur, schedule a Zoom video chat, and brainstorm about any potential equity listings or exchange for capital that they may be interested in.
So is there a minimum investment? Like what if I have $20? Is that enough?
I guess it depends on the entrepreneur. I mean, some entrepreneurs are looking for anything that they can get, and others are looking for a minimum of $10,000 from an accredited investor. It really just depends, on the business and what the agreement is between the two individuals.
For only $20, you too can be a venture capital investor. Big money Maroney over there.
Yeah, that's what they call me.
That's what I'm going to start calling you.
Yeah.
So a component of this is kind of like a live stream, kind of almost a TV component in a sense,
yeah.
Where some of these ideas end up kind of going into something that you can watch. Talk a little bit about that and how you kind of fill that out and what the interactivity is around that.
Yeah, yeah. So that's something that we're really excited about. It's called the Crowd TV. You can check it out at thecrowd.net. But essentially what we do is we pair high profile executives, and then we have a former CNBC anchor, Ross Westgate. We filmed our first episode in London, and we basically Skyped in the entrepreneurs, and we Skyped in the executives, and then we had Ross mitigate it. And essentially we had a healthy, good discussion about their business, any growth recommendations that the executives had. And then there was actually a live component too, so that anyone watching from the crowd could send in questions and interact as well. So it's a way for basically any audience member, but also entrepreneurs to talk about their business in a healthy public forum.
And this webinar that was kind of episode one, let's say, is, I noticed when I went to the site, like I couldn't figure out how to play it. Is it out there available to watch after the fact, or do you have to be there live in order to kind of participate?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to create a section that's in talks this week. We're going to put that up on our website, but it is on YouTube.
Okay.
So you could just search. Yeah, you can search the Crowd Live TV episode one, and there's a whole hour segment there.
All right.
And then we're excited, actually. I mean, shortly after, we had 400,000 committed to a couple companies after this episode, so we're pretty excited about that. And we hope to, and then our next one's going to be a female all-female panel. We want to promote female entrepreneurship because female entrepreneurs only receive 2% of the funding out there. So we think it's important that they have a voice and they have a chance to raise money as well. So that's episode two. And we look forward to having people tune in.
There we go. There's video of the episode one.
So this is the episode. So how is this different than something like Shark Tank?
Sure. So, I mean, that's kind of where this whole thing started, actually. Chris Chagrou and his family, so Noor Chagrou, basically were sitting at home one day, and she wanted to basically invest in one of the companies on the screen. And, he's like, sweetie, that's not possible. And then he thought about it and he was like, well, why not? And then, so they brainstormed together. And so that's where this was born, actually, was watching Shark Tank. And we hope, the live audience component too is a huge differentiator there. Because the audience then can feel like they're included, but also they have an opportunity to offer to invest or get in contact with the entrepreneur directly.
Within the app, a lot of what I was kind of reading and looking at, there are like these 60 second kind of intros into what the business idea is. Basically the pitch is 60 seconds or so. Is that enough time for people to make a decision? Or, I mean, I guess that encourages people to kind of go through a number of ideas, but is it easy to pitch your great idea in 60 seconds? I've never had a great idea personally. Not one. Still waiting for it, but what do you think?
I think if you can't have a 60 second pitch or less, because when you're on the app, you'll probably know whether you're interested in the idea.
Yeah.
Probably in 30 seconds or less, to be honest with you. And any startup, any class that you take or any pitch conference that you go to, they'll tell you, you got to have an elevator pitch that you can say it in 60 seconds or less, or, right. You're going to lose people's interest. So I think that's the perfect amount of time.
Right.
So, like you said, this was an idea, that a young woman had and her father helped her make it a reality. So it seems like when I was looking through your about page, a lot of the founders are very young, either in high school or at the University of Chicago. What are some of the benefits and the challenges to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's an ecosystem where young people have a lot of ideas. I mean, ideas are ubiquitous, right? And, people want to will them into reality. And so the college university market is a great place for us to be. And having a young team allows us to be in those ecosystems and really help and network with those ideas to get them on the platform and help them, match with potential investors.
My question has less to do about what you do now, more about the future. I'm talking, this could be a little weird, but maybe not, because I feel like AI is like the term that suddenly gets sandwiched in on every single facet of technology and innovation and all that. Do you think there will be a time where like AI assisted, systems can actually make a good determination as far as whether something is a good idea, a palatable idea to put venture capital behind?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fascinating topic, especially with all the facial recognition that's going on. But in terms of, I mean, that makes it really tough, though. I mean, I think you have to have a live person swiping left or right on ideas. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't want my money basically being determined by a AI. I don't know about
you. You never know.
You
never know.
It's an interesting thought. And I think down the line that you could definitely see that being a part of, potentially scouting for new ideas.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Well, Chase, thank you so much for joining us. Chase Johnson is the COO of The Crowd and The Crowd TV. You can find out more about both at thecrowd.net. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Chase.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Take care. Best of luck.
Take care. Thanks.
Now, you say that you never had a good idea, but remember when the two of us came up with the John Den VR?
Like, oh, yeah. You're right. So I had half of a good idea.
Yeah. All of John Denver in virtual reality.
In virtual reality. It's still a wonderful idea that needs to happen.
You know, maybe we'll talk to Chase after.
Or John Den VR, AR, at the end, because it seems like augmented reality might win out over VR. So
yeah, John Den.
John Denver.
Okay.
John Denver is what it would be. Yeah.
We need to work on our elevator pitch.
Thank you for reminding me.
Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg says the future is in private messaging. After the break, we'll talk to Kurt Wagner from Recode about what that means. But first, this episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by Gazelle, the trusted online marketplace for buying certified pre-owned devices. You have set your creative and professional goals for this year. Hopefully you have. It's already March. But do you have the right tools to tackle those goals? It is time to upgrade your devices with Gazelle. Devices from Gazelle are available in fair, good, and excellent condition, and all at great prices. Now, Leo buys most of my iPhones, but when it came time for me to spend my own bucks, my own dollars on iPhones for my kids, I went straight to Gazelle. They have everything from iPhone 6 through 10 to a variety of Samsung Galaxy phones, which Jason will probably buy his kids, but I did not buy my kids. They also offer MacBooks, Air, and Pro. I'm definitely going to be looking into that because my kids go to a BYOD school, so I have to buy them some MacBooks, and it sounds good to buy one that someone else has used previously. They also have iPads, Standard, Air, and Pro. Each device goes through a thorough 30-point inspection. Devices are backed by a 30-day return policy. There's no restocking fee and free shipping. All of Gazelle's products are sold without a carrier contract, and they're available for support by major carriers, or you can buy them unlocked. Financing is available on all devices with Affirm. Get instantly approved and pay off in 3, 6, or 12 months. Just select financing with Affirm at checkout. With Gazelle's incredible selection of quality pre-owned devices, they are also an excellent choice for students. Don't know what to do with your old device? Check out Gazelle for competitive offers on your used phones, tablets, or your computers. Level up this year with new tech from Gazelle. Visit gazelle.com/twit to buy a certified pre-owned device and you get 10% off your purchase. That's gazelle.com/twit. And we thank Gazelle for their support.
Facebook isn't necessarily the company that you might think of when you think of personal and private communication. Yes, Facebook Messenger and WhatsApp are two private messaging products owned by Facebook and ran by Facebook. But at its core, it's always seemed that Facebook's big MO has been about getting its users to share more and more about themselves in every direction possible. And as we've seen, that's come around to bite them in recent years. CEO Mark Zuckerberg actually wrote a Facebook post yesterday where he looked into the future towards what he sees as a social networking world with privacy as its primary focus. A big change of direction, it seems like. Joining us to talk about this vision and why it's kind of strange coming from Zuckerberg is Kurt Wagner from Recode. Welcome back, Kurt.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing awesome. Doing even better now that we got you on here. Appreciate your time. So talk a little bit about this shifting perspective from what Facebook's mission has always been, what we've grown to be used to hearing from Facebook and especially Zuckerberg, and to what he's detailing in the post. In many ways, it really seems like an about face in lots of directions.
Yeah. And in some ways, it's a huge about face, right? I mean, when you think about what Facebook has been historically, it is a a semi-public network where you're posting things that exist for a long time. You know, I still have photos on there from 10 years ago. And all of the data that I share is then used to target me with ads, right? So it's kind of been this place that has a feeling of permanence to it, even on the internet. What he's talking about doesn't really align with that mission at all, right? I mean, he's talking about private communication that's encrypted, where maybe your data, either isn't shared or disappears, that Facebook might not have access to it. And I think that just on the surface doesn't really jive with what Facebook has done historically. At the same time, you have to remember, I mean, Facebook already owns WhatsApp, which is a, private encrypted messaging service. Facebook owns Messenger, which is a private messaging service with some level of encryption. So it's not as if this is like totally, ridiculous, something that Facebook has never even tried before. It just doesn't really seem to align with kind of this vision of Facebook that we've created over the last 15 years.
Yeah, right. Like they own WhatsApp, and that's a very private kind of, or so we believe, private messaging avenue. But I mean, so much of Facebook's core business is built around advertising, built around recommendation, their recommendation engine that is entirely driven by all of this public access. And especially, he writes a lot about true end-to-end encryption across all of Facebook apps. So that would be super, based on the technology as we know it now, and trying to read the tea leaves as far as where that would take Facebook, that would really change Facebook's core business, right? That has the potential to totally upend it.
Yeah, I think there's two parts here that could change the core business. The first being, most of Facebook's ads are targeted based on data from your profile or data it collects about you. If it doesn't necessarily, know what you're talking about or who you're talking to, or what you're sharing, it doesn't necessarily have all the same levels of data to target you that it did before. So that is problem one. Problem two is, no one has really created a killer business around messaging, even if it's not private and encrypted, right? I mean, your messaging inbox is kind of an intimate personal place. And so it's kind of tough to put ads in there. There's been some discussion that maybe this would be a commerce play for Facebook. So you might get, you go to the store, you buy something at the register, and then you get your receipt sent to you. Like maybe there's a business kind of in facilitating those kinds of interactions. But really, it's not only a data situation here, but it's just kind of a business model in general situation, which is that private messaging is not something that has, at least up until now, we haven't seen that become a massive business in the way that, a feed-based advertising model seems to work.
I cried a little when I read this. It was so upsetting. The first thing is, isn't this sort of the way Facebook started with private messaging? Because when I remember back in the day, you had blogs and you posted things on the internet, you had websites, and then here came Facebook, here's a place where you can just privately communicate with your friends in this very private place. That's how they started. And then they sort of, made posts more public and became this giant thing. But so to say hey, we just had this great idea. Let's, make a private messaging platform. That's what he never acknowledged the fact that in the beginning, Facebook was the place where you posted things that only your friends would see. And this is what he's saying.
Well, I think that in some ways it probably felt more private than it actually was, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we've learned now that a lot of the stuff that was shared, a lot of those, the data that was collected actually wasn't that private, right? So it's not as if this is like a revert back to Facebook 101. At least that's not how I took it. I also think that, there's not a lot of details of what this actually means for Facebook, right? Like Mark Zuckerberg talked a lot about WhatsApp being this example. Hey, WhatsApp does this. We kind of want to be more like WhatsApp. What does that actually look like inside Facebook's app? I don't think we really know. I mean, the fact that he says we want to move in a direction where things are more private, that's really great. I don't think that that necessarily means Facebook is going to, you know, disappear next year. I just don't know exactly how he plans to kind of merge this idea of privacy with a network that, again, has primarily been public. So there's a million questions here. And I think that, yes, it's a little bit it makes you laugh to think like all of a sudden Mark Zuckerberg discovered privacy and the importance of it. But at the same time, I do think that, you know, this is probably where things are headed, right? I mean, private messaging is at least as a user case of one, it's easily the thing I do most on my phone, right? Which is text other people and message other people. So I think Facebook noticed that and they said, hey, we need to lean into this if we want to be relevant, 5 years down the road.
Well, and to a certain degree, it might also be trading one problem for another. You know, private messaging apps like WhatsApp, you know, violence in Myanmar, you know, were largely attributed to kind of propaganda being spread inside of these private networks. So there's a lot of challenges there to be solved as well. Are they trading one problem for potentially yet another one? And maybe we don't know how big that problem actually is or could be.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole thing about encryption is that, you know, stuff isn't traceable, right? If I'm messaging with you on an encrypted service, you have the message and I have the message. Facebook doesn't know what we're talking about. That's great for our privacy. That's terrible if we are, you know, planning a bank robbery, right? It's like there are a lot of things that could theoretically people might be capable of doing now that they have these kind of secure places to talk. At the same time, this is, again, not new. I mean, like WhatsApp is already end-to-end encrypted. We could be using WhatsApp today to do all this kind of stuff. And actually people do, and it's already a problem for Facebook. And I think what, you know, Mark Zuckerberg kind of talked about that these are new ideas and we need to talk as a society and a community to figure out, you know, what should the rules be? Like the reason he's saying that is because he doesn't want Facebook to become the villain for all bad stuff that happens on the internet 5 years from now. And I mean, I think he has some valid points to be made, and these are now my words, not his, but like, we don't blame Verizon when someone plans a terrorist attack on their phone by making a phone call, right? There is technology that enables bad stuff. I think that Facebook already kind of does that. This will probably lead to more of that, but, you know, that's a trade-off that at least Mark Zuckerberg says he's willing to make. As a society, again, it's something that we need to start having conversations about, is like, how important is privacy if it means that these other things might be possible down the road?
The other thing that was mixed in here, which frustrated me, was the idea of impermanence. He's talking about he wants to lean toward the impermanence, which, you know, was started by Snapchat. Like, we'll have these disappearing messages. And Facebook already has Facebook stories and Instagram stories that disappear unless you archive them. And I get it. Like, I like that idea. And it's part of what I liked about Snapchat, that we all should be less concerned about making the perfect picture and having it archived and thinking, you know, our entire lives are online. But at the same time, that impermanence is tricky because anybody could screenshot anything. And so if we're going around thinking right, like, oh, well, it's going to disappear, I'll do anything, I'll send anything. I think that's really dangerous.
Yeah, and it depends on what the technology actually ends up looking like, right? And so that's where we get to this, going back to the questions we were asking a few minutes ago, which is like, how does this actually get implemented, right? It's a nice idea, but until we actually see what Facebook decides to build and how it works, it's a little bit hard to even discuss. Because, you know, maybe there would be some kind of prevention from a screenshot. I really don't know. But I do think it is a little bit, again, laughable is maybe too snarky of a term, but like, this is a company that for years has not been about impermanence. In fact, I get notifications all the time. Hey, do you remember this photo you shared 8 years ago? you know, you should log in and share it with your friends, right? And so, like, it is just a very dramatic change of approach that we've seen some with stories, and they've talked about some with the popularity of stories. But this idea that all of a sudden Facebook is a place where nothing's going to live on beyond, you know, 24 hours, I don't think that'll ultimately be the case. It'll just be a matter of how is it ultimately implemented.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Zuckerberg also talked about the importance of keeping Facebook's data centers out of countries where like surveillance on their citizens is happening. This would imply that Facebook would be backing away from China. And I think there was some news yesterday about that fact. How big of a move would this be for Facebook? I mean, is that a pretty big business decision? It seems like all other companies are like really struggling on, you know, wanting to be in China because there's so much to be gained from being there. But, you know, that goes counter to, let's say, the ethics of the Western, you know, Western U.S.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the China thing makes a huge difference, to be honest with you, at this point. I mean, it's been 15 years. Mm-hmm. And as far as I've been able to tell, Facebook has never gotten close going into China, and it's doing fine. Yeah, the business is booming, even though no one in China is using Facebook. I think where it becomes potentially problematic is in other countries that do use Facebook right now, but where there might be, you know, governments in place that are saying, hey, we have really strict rules about what people can say online, and maybe Facebook participates or follows those local rules right now. It won't be able to do that if everything is encrypted. And so is it possible that other countries that currently use Facebook might ban Facebook products? So if everything's encrypted in, and I'm just making this up now, but let's say everything is encrypted in Russia, right? And the government of Russia says, hey, unless we can kind of track some of this stuff, we're not going to allow your service to operate here. That seems like a real potential threat to Facebook. Mm-hmm. Now, you could argue, should companies operate in countries where that's the rule of law? And that's probably a separate, longer debate to be had. But I do think this could create some drama for Facebook in countries it already operates in. I don't necessarily think the fact that they won't go to China really matters, because I think there are a lot of people – myself included, who kind of thought that ship had already sailed.
Right.
So the idea of privacy and encryption that he's talking about, I mean, I've read this a couple times, and nowhere in here does he say anything that would exclude him from actually monetizing our messages and selling that information to advertisers. Like, not on a, I mean, I can see, like, most of my text messages are like to my husband: when you're at the store, can you buy milk? Can you, you know, all these things that could really be used to target me pretty effectively on things that I buy and things that I do and, you know, all that stuff. Did you, anywhere in there, do you feel like he said we're never going to do that?
Well, that's where the encryption part comes in. So if it's truly end-to-end encrypted, as Mark Zuckerberg has said that he wants it to be, the situation you described actually wouldn't be possible. Okay. So if you and your husband are messaging and you're saying, hey, here's the grocery list, that message would be viewable on your phone and on his phone and nowhere else. Facebook would not have access to it. They wouldn't be able to read it. So it wouldn't therefore be targetable. And that kind of goes back to our conversation a little earlier about what this means for Facebook's business, right? Like, if they don't know that you're at the grocery store looking for milk, can, you know, Safeway target you? Can dairy farms target you in the way that maybe it did previously? And the answer is going to be no. So I don't believe he said explicitly, like, hey, we are not going to use your private messages for business. But if he builds the products in the way that he said he was multiple times, which was end-to-end encrypted, I don't think that would be possible to begin with. So at this point in the conversation, that's not something that I find concerning. But again, it all comes back to how this is ultimately implemented, because if it's not implemented in the way that he's now saying it will be, that creates a totally different conversation.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's a possibility that it won't, the encryption won't be turned on by default, right? And then he gets everybody that doesn't turn it on?
Possible. I mean, WhatsApp, I believe, is default end-to-end encrypted. And I imagine that is kind of the general approach that they will take for most of these apps. But again, we've seen that they don't always do things by default regularly. So it is certainly possible.
All right, thanks. Kurt, we'll let you get to that.
Like, am I getting another call right now?
Can you hear me okay?
I think you're getting another call. It's another interview. Okay. Kurt Wagner with Recode. We really appreciate your time, man. Thank you so much for talking to us about Facebook.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day.
Bye.
Kurt is super popular, by the way. I don't know if you knew that about Kurt. Thanks to Kurt for joining us and for going a little bit over. We apologize. Coming up, Waymo is selling some of its LiDAR technology to its partners. But first, this episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by Envoy. It's time to welcome guests to your modern lobby and be ready for everything that comes through your front door. That's what Envoy is all about. Envoy Visitors is an iPad kiosk that makes workplaces more efficient. How does it work? Well, it's actually really easy. We have one set up in the front here. When visitors arrive, they sign in on an iPad that's set up on a little kiosk station that we have up at the front of the desk. They enter their details, sign any legal documents necessary like NDAs, all right there on the iPad. Envoy then notifies their host, so the host knows that that person has arrived. Envoy will automatically alert your employee when a guest arrives, so it makes it super easy. It takes the guesswork out of it. Saves you time, saves you hassle, of course. Your employee is going to know who's coming and when, making awkward meetings, well, a thing of the past. And there are just a number of benefits to using Envoy Visitors. You can boost your office efficiency, smart security that does not intimidate. Everyone knows how to use an iPad to sign in, so it's really straightforward. There's no more paper logbook that doesn't provide any real value. You could sign in unlimited visitors. You can print customized badges once they signed in, send alerts when super important people arrive. It even notifies administrators about unattended guests, and you can integrate with your existing security systems like Wi-Fi access, ID checks, and emergency notifications, giving you even more enhanced security. And finally, you'll have data on the visitors in your office so you know who's coming, when they're on site, who they're meeting with, and why. And you have all that history after the fact so you can know who was there. Envoy Visitors works with the tools that you're already using, Slack, G Suite, Box, and Salesforce, Chatter, just to name a few. They're designed to help companies of all types, including those in highly regulated industries, meet security and compliance requirements. So you can join companies like Nike, Pinterest, Spotify, that have all worked with Envoy to welcome over 30 million visitors into their businesses. Protect your people, property, and ideas the welcoming way with Envoy, and see why 10,000 workplaces worldwide choose Envoy to make a great first impression. You can make a great first impression as well. Go to envoy.com/twit and start your free trial today. That's envoy.com/twit. And we thank Envoy for their support. Waymo has spent a lot of time and a lot of money developing its self-driving car technology, in particular its many flavors of LiDAR. That's laser technology that's used to beam out pulses of laser light to determine where and how far away objects are that are surrounding the vehicle. And Waymo has been pretty tight-lipped as to how its in-house technology works. They're all kind of holding it to the vest, you know, close to the vest right now. But now it appears that they're ready to open things up just a little bit for a fee, of course. Sam Abu El-Samid wrote about the Waymo announcement for Forbes and joins us to talk about it. Welcome back, Sam.
Hey, Jason and Megan. Good to talk to you again.
It's great to have you back. So tell us a little bit about this delicious laser bear honeycomb that they call it, the LiDAR sensors that Waymo is making available to its partners.
They've definitely got somebody working on the naming side for the product.
Apparently.
So we found out about a little more than 2 years ago when Waymo first introduced the Chrysler Pacifica minivans that they're now using, that they had actually switched from using off-the-shelf sensor components from companies like Velodyne for their LiDAR and various other companies for their cameras and radar to developing all their own stuff in-house and making their own sensors. And that includes the LiDAR. And you know, one of the reasons they did that was to improve the performance compared to what was available at the time off-the-shelf, and also to drive down the cost. Because, if you remember the early Google self-driving cars, they had those big spinning Velodyne LiDAR sensors on the roof. Those cost about $80,000 a piece. Wow. And, you know, they reduced the cost by about 90%. And they developed three kinds of LiDAR: a long range, which is the one on the roof, some medium range sensors, and these short range sensors, which you can see them on the cars. There's one on the grill, one on each front fender, and then one on the back that detect what's in close around the car, like pedestrians and other vehicles and cyclists and things like that. And they've been, as you said, they've been very secretive about this stuff. They haven't talked about any of the details around the technology, what they're doing differently. But now for the first time, they have said that they're going to offer this short range sensor, the one you see in the picture there, which they're calling the Laser Bear Honeycomb. They're going to offer that to other companies that want to use it for a variety of applications, as long as they're not building autonomous vehicles. So for things like robotics, examples, I can't remember the name of it, but there was that security robot that you guys had on screensavers back last year. Things like that and various other kinds of applications where LiDAR can be very useful. We don't know the exact specs of this thing. It's probably got a range of about, somewhere in the 20 to 30 foot range, maybe a little more than that. And we don't know what it's going to cost. But if you're working on things that aren't autonomous vehicles, you can now reach out to there's a form on Waymo's website that you can fill out to get more information and potentially get your hands on some of these sensors.
So I know you said that we don't know the cost, but are we talking like $500 or $50,000? Like,
no, well, yeah, I mean, when they originally introduced announced that they were doing their own sensors, they talked about a 90% cost reduction, which, from $80,000 sensors available at the time would put you in about the $8,000 range. My guess is now with these short range sensors, at least, we're probably talking in the $1,000 to $2,000 range for any kind of significant volumes and maybe even less than that.
Megan might even have $20 to invest in a honeycomb LiDAR sensor.
I think I'm sure you could get Leo to put one of these on his Amex card. Yeah.
But they are selling it to companies though, because I went and I tried to buy one, and it's like, what's your company? What are you going to do with it?
Tell us what you're going
to
do.
That's exactly it. They want to know what you're going to do with it, because they don't want to sell them to competitors. They clearly see this as a competitive advantage for their autonomous vehicles. But if you're working on other kinds of projects, you do have the opportunity to get these now.
Yeah, robotics seems like an obvious fit. What about the software to go along with it? Like, is this kind of a standard thing? Like, I'm sure Waymo has developed, along with its proprietary hardware, software, for it to tie into. People building robots that might want to take advantage of this technology. Like, is there any indication as far as how easy it's going to be for them when they bring this hardware in to plug that into the system that they have, or is Waymo providing that?
Yeah, I expect that Waymo will probably provide some basic software drivers in order to interface with the hardware. But they haven't said whether they're going to provide any of the any of the signal processing. The software that's required, to understand what's going on in there, any kind of, neural networks or other AI software. But there's a lot of open source AI software out there now that's available. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people working on this kind of stuff. So it shouldn't be too hard, once you've got the hardware and got it integrated into whatever project you're doing, to get something up and running without too much difficulty.
Mm-hmm. So I've read through all of the Waymo's description of this and all of their marketing material, and it appears to me like they're sort of trying to distance themselves from Google. Like, you don't see anything about Google or them being part of Google or Alphabet. Is that accurate? Do you think they are trying to not be associated with the Alphabet name?
I think that applies to most of the Alphabet companies, that aren't Google. Is, they've always tried to, be standalone businesses. And, I think that over the long haul, what Waymo and Verily and all the other Alphabet companies, Alphabet's probably looking at the potential for, maybe spinning them off or doing an IPO. In order to capture some of the potential value of these companies. So, ever since they announced the Waymo branding about a little more than 2 years ago, that's kind of been the approach they've taken, is to really focus on the Waymo name rather than the Google name.
So they've released one of their LiDAR systems. That means two to go. When will those be for sale? Or do you think that'll ever happen? I mean, Waymo probably has to keep some of their cards.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, I think, you know, at least the medium range sensor, they might start to offer that one. You know, there's probably some applications where that one could be useful. I suspect the long range sensor is the one that they'll probably want to keep internally the longest, you know, because based on what we've heard from Waymo, you know, one of the things that they've claimed is that, you know, they have the capability to operate their vehicles at higher speeds, at highway speeds, you know, with the LiDAR. And most of the long-range LiDAR that's out there in the market today, available from a variety of companies, you know, is good for about a maximum range of about 200 to 250 meters, so about 600 to 750 feet, roughly, which, you know, at highway speeds at 60, 70 miles an hour, that's not very far. You know, I mean, you cover that distance pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you need some pretty long-range sensors to be able to operate at higher speeds. That's why most of the automated vehicles that are out there today, you know, have focused on low speed applications, just because of the range of the sensors is limited. So I think that the long range sensor, the one that you see on the roof, is the one that they'll probably hold on to the longest, at least until there's some other competition out there.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Why do you think Waymo's doing this now? Like, I mean, obviously, you know, self-driving vehicles, it's a slow rollout at this point. And we know that Google or Alphabet companies, you know, are now at a point where the company really wants them to prove that they are economically viable as quickly as possible. Is that why they're doing this now? Does that say anything about the viability of their, like, their automated taxi service and when we might see that?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think, you know, in general, you know, over the last couple of years, we've seen Alphabet kind of rein in a lot of their moonshot companies like Waymo and Verily and some of the other, you know, X Labs projects, you know, trying to move them towards being revenue generating and potentially eventually profitable. And, you know, so Waymo, you know, started charging for rides with their Waymo One service in Arizona in December. And, you know, that's still a very limited rollout. You know, with something like this, you know, they probably see the potential both to generate some more revenue and also to, you know, to get some scale. I mean, you know, with hardware like this, you know, the you know, there's a lot of engineering costs associated with it. And to try to recover some of those costs, you know, the more you can scale up production and get more volume out of it, then, you know, you can get those economies of scale and drive down the cost even more. Mm-hmm. So that will help the Waymo business, both in terms of reducing, hopefully driving down the cost of the sensors, and also, you know, generating some direct revenue from that. And then, you know, the other thing that they may be looking for is more feedback in other applications, you know, that could potentially, you know, roll back into the development process and make the sensors better.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool stuff, Sam Abou-El-Samid. Of course, Navigant Research, also one of the hosts of the Wheel Bearings podcast. Where can people find your podcast?
You can find that at wheelbearings.media. And this week we have episode 100 coming
nice.
Out. So we're into the triple digits.
I love a nice round number. Congratulations.
Thank
Sam,
you.
It's always great to get you on. Thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Great to talk to you guys, too.
All right. Have
Take
a great
care.
Day. See you later.
Bye.
Coming up, it's our stories of the week. What did we choose to blab on and on about? You'll find out. But first, this episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by Hover. Building your online brand has never been more important, and buying a domain name for your passion is the first and the biggest step to building your personal brand online. My personal brand is Goats Wearing Clothes, which is why you can find me at goatswearingclothes.com. What's your personal brand? Keeping your domain name separate from hosting also gives you the flexibility to choose the right platform for your business. No one wants to be stuck with a solution that doesn't meet their needs. And who doesn't need a domain name? Nowadays, it feels like everyone has one. So it's important that yours stands out. Hover has over 400 domain extensions to choose from, so your options really feel limitless. The one we really like lately is .me. .me is a unique extension to use for your personal profile, and it's a great way to stand out from the generic .com or the .net. Everybody's got those. You want something special. If you're sending a resume to potential employees, use a .me to showcase what you're all about. Hover also will offer you best-in-class customer support team and no upsells. Clean and simple user experience and interface. Personalized email that matches your domain to further support your online identity. So it's great to send. If you're looking for a job, you want to send out your resume, send it from an email. It's personalized to you. And the Hover Connect feature allows you to connect your domain name to many website builders just with a few simple clicks. Now, I've owned MeganMaroney.com before I even knew about Hover. I've had it forever. But I just use Hover to buy MeganMaroney.tech and MeganMaroney.me because of that sale. I took advantage of it, and you can too. You can become your own best advocate. The .me domains are on sale for this month only at Hover. For only $9.99. That's $9.99. And like I said before, no upsells. They're not going to try to keep selling you a bunch of stuff that you don't need. And if you've never used Hover before, you can get an additional 10% off any domain name, any of the domain name extensions that are offered. Visit hover.com/twit. Get their deals. Look at all their deals and get them. Go make sure to add /twit after there so that you'll get the deal. It is time to get your portfolio website up and running. Hover.com/twit. That's hover.com/twit. And we thank Hover for their support.
I saw on there that MeganMaroney.guru is still available. So you might want to just think. I'm just saying. You might want to get that.
Excuse me. Can we pause for a second?
I also saw MeganMaroney.design and that, yeah. You're not a designer, no. So that makes sense, right?
We should look for John Den VR.
The more we say it out loud, the less available
John
it will be.
Denver.pizza. Is that available?
Dot pizza. Everyone will go there if we get John Den VR dot pizza.
Is it available?
Yeah.
It's available. For only
awesome.
$7.99.
Nice.
Get that.
All right.
Get
so
it.
If you've got a pizzeria and you want to call it John Den VR and have a VR room and John Denver music playing in it, then there you go.
That is a good idea.
Blew your mind.
Get Chase on the phone. We're going to pitch it to the crowd.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. We'll see how that goes. YouTube continues to be a site filled with all kinds of and varieties of misinformation. As we know, much of big tech has been challenged in the past few years with creating ways to inform their users that something that they might be searching for is actually not factually correct. That it is, in fact, a myth. Well, YouTube is now testing a new method of fact-checking its content in India, apparently, that works when a user plugs in a search within the app. So when the user is actually searching for something and it kind of triggers the system to say, that search term, you know, makes us think that you're looking for something that we know is inaccurate. A little fact check heading will appear at the top of the search results within the app and give a little bit of context around it. It says hoax alert. It'll give you kind of a little clickable link. So, you know, what the claim is and the rating, you know, whether it's true or false, and it'll still give you the search results. So if you're looking for those, you still want to watch it, you can. But YouTube doing its part along with all other kind of tech companies, they're all trying to figure out how they kind of do this in a way that isn't intrusive or whatever. But how do you get this information in front of people at the point of search so that if they think it's true, at least they can watch it knowing that, oh, by the way, this is a hoax. It's been debunked. But, you know, go ahead and watch it anyways if you like.
Yeah, this is a great idea. I would love for this to be out there, but I just don't see how they could do it, how they have the human power, I mean, to do it. I guess you could use, like, search terms. So,
right.
But somebody would have to approve that. I mean, you know, people are so good at gaming YouTube. Like, every week there's some sort of,
true.
We're going to put weird things in the comments to, you know, to timestamp. And I just can't see this working at all, although I'd like to. But I mean, because also you say, okay, let's say I search for vaccines cause autism. Mm-hmm. Is that going to come up as like that's a hoax? Because there are a lot of people that would argue that it's not a hoax. There's a lot of people that really feel like they that is true.
Mm-hmm.
And so is YouTube going to risk alienating all of those people if they come up and say, well, this has been proven, you know, science says this isn't true.
Right. I wonder where that line is drawn and how they make that actual determination. It's a really good point. I don't know. They're testing it in India. It has 250 million YouTube users there. I imagine there is some automation around this. Obviously, mm-hmm. YouTube is just so vast that there's no way to truly
right. some
have
guy
just one person yeah. be like yes. Yes, no, yes.
You big dummy. Of course that's not true.
You know, and is that person the arbiter of truth? You know, how is that determined? But apparently this is populated. It ties in with a half dozen fact-checking services in India. Many of those are the same ones that Facebook is using for its own fact-checking in its service. So I would imagine it's probably a mixture. You know, humans are involved in the beginning, and then it's some sort of dynamic search around, you know, probably matching to titles to begin with, you know, mm-hmm. titles and descriptions of, oh, if it's saying this causes that and that is false and that's what the title of the video is, pretty safe to assume we can put the fact check box up at the top of that. Mm-hmm. And that's better than doing nothing on everything,
yeah.
you know. But who knows how effective that'll be. But I did want to mention just really quick, outside of this story, I realize it's only story of the week, but this broke, I think this broke while we've been doing the show, or at least I read it while we were doing the show.
You were reading while we were doing the show?
Well, somebody in the chat posted that Airbnb is buying Hotel Tonight.
Oh.
Which, that's kind of interesting news. Yeah. I've never used Hotel Tonight. I know when I was on iOS Today with you a few weeks ago with you and Leo, you had mentioned it was the Valentine's Day last minute mm-hmm. ideas mm-hmm. and you had mentioned Hotel Tonight. Or like, have you ever used Hotel Tonight?
Oh, yeah.
It seems like a perfect fit. Like that yeah. seems like a really good fit.
I've used it. And on iOS Today, I did say use it quick because Airbnb is supposed to buy them.
Oh, okay. So you were prescient. You knew the
yeah,
future.
I do know. but it was rumored that they were going to buy them, and that yeah. makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I'm very curious about that. I mean, I love Airbnb.
I love Hotel Tonight because I like to do, I don't like to plan ahead. I just like to say, I know you plan ahead, like when you have a vacation, three years in advance or something.
Yeah.
But for me, it's like, oh, well, I could stay in a hotel tonight.
Yeah. how do you do that, though? You've got three kids. How do you suddenly decide tonight is
they
the night to stay in a hotel? Oh, I see. I could stay
yeah,
in a hotel.
Just me.
Got
yeah.
it. Okay. Now I get it. That does make things a little bit more possible.
No, but my parents also live in town, so I have that. And yeah.
That must be nice.
Remember when Jibo the pet robot made the cover of Time magazine? He was lauded as one of the 25 best inventions of 2017. He's dying.
Oh.
A slow death in front of its owners, which is very sad. Last year, the company sold its IP and assets, and now, according to Tech Reporter Dylan Martin, Jibo is dancing his way to his grave. Can we take a little bit of a look and a listen?
Let's see here. We'll get to the beginning here. And go, Jibo.
Not great news. The servers out there that let me do what I do are going to be turned off soon. Once that happens, our interactions with each other are going to be limited. You can learn more at Jibo.com and by tapping the What's New button in my menu. I want to say I've really enjoyed our time together. Thank you very, very much for having me around. Maybe someday, when robots are way more advanced than today, and everyone has them in their homes, you can tell yours that I said hello. I wonder if they'll be able to do this.
It's just so sad.
Oh, sorry. This is our Jibo. He's already dead.
Poor one. Yeah. There's nothing going on with that, Jibo. Just dance for us or something, Jibo. Jeez, Jibo.
Some issues of this. First of all, that video says, well, this is not great news. He's like, I'm announcing my death. That is how I would like to announce my death. Well, this is not great news.
This is not great news, you guys. I want you to sit down. I'm dead right now.
And I feel really bad for the people that bought Jibo.
Yeah.
For the early adopters and then befriended him or her or it or however they referred to their robot pet. And then just, I don't know. It's sad.
It's the prime example of like nothing is in technology is certain, right? Mm-hmm. Like even Jibo could make the cover of Time magazine as mm-hmm. one of the best inventions of 2017, and yet this is what we're left with.
I got his some.
He's kind of got a lot of finger. Maybe we broke him with finger smudges.
I don't know.
Apparently, the developers worked together after the company had already shut down to put together these goodbye messages, and they also tried to work. I don't know if they actually rolled it out on an OS that could be. That could be flashed onto here that would bring back some of the features that don't rely on a server. But, I mean, I think at the end of the day, I put in another video. You don't have to play it with audio, but Jibo will also say that, you know, my servers are off. Things are going to be different. You can still say, hey, Jibo, but I won't understand you. And, you know, there are some new buttons on the main menu. And, I mean, basically, Jibo is dead. I mean, even with resurrecting, it's such a cool piece of hardware, though. It's really kind of sad that something couldn't be done. Like, maybe hackers can, you know, it's running Linux. So maybe hackers can get in there and turn it into an Echo or turn it into a Google Home, something like that, because this would be a pretty awesome Google Home.
Yeah, I think some people could do something. I've seen some stuff. And then they're also like on sale on eBay for, I don't know, it's really fun to spend it.
It's kind of nice just as like a stress reliever.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, you know, it's like a fidget spinner.
Yes. I also put another video in there, which this reminded me of. I don't know if we can play that last little bit of that last video.
Oh. When Hal 9000, sings Daisy,
sings the song, and
and that's how it ends. Yeah. I mean, that's how they should have had Jibo end, right? Like
really
you fire off a comment to it or a query, and it's like, I can't do that, Dave,
right,
and it
exactly.
just starts singing to you. Well, Jibo, it's been real.
Why isn't this Jibo plugged in? Is what I don't understand. I mean,
because it doesn't do anything.
Oh, like lights wouldn't turn on or anything.
Well,
I mean, I guess it's silly to turn it on if it's not going to do anything.
We turn on the Jibo during the hot preview, right? With Leo, and it really didn't do a whole lot.
No.
Like, it showed a slight bit of life.
Right.
But that was about it.
I told it that I loved it several times.
If you ever relied on Jibo for anything, you're hurting right now
because
you can't rely on
but
Jibo.
If you were relying on Jibo for stuff, like, you have bigger problems probably.
Maybe you're just a forward thinker. You're just living in the future, and the future will rely on robots. It won't be weird.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
And Jibo was there to break our hearts in the very beginning. Tech News Weekly records live every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnw@twit.tv.
And listen, if you're feeling lonely, if you have a Jibo that just died, subscribe to our show because we will cheer you up.
Yeah.
And you can listen.
We'll fill the void.
Yeah. Subscribe at twit.tv/TNW. But you can also listen on your HomePod or your Google Home or your Amazon Echo. You have
robot options.
Friends.
Yeah.
And follow us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, etc. And if you want to tweet at me all of your love for robots, I'm here waiting at Megan Maroney on Twitter.
Man, this is really sad. I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Don't go, Jibo. Don't go. Don't leave us.
Oh,
thanks to Alex for being our TD today. Thanks to Jerry for being our prompter scroller guy. And Burke for being in here for a split second. See? Moment of fame. And thanks to you for watching Tech News Weekly. We will see y'all next week. Bye, everybody.